The Secret Origins Podcast, Episode 3.
Welcome to episode 3 of the Secret Origins Podcast. I'm your host, Dave Jim and Mike, and joining me on this superhero quest is Lupus Convoy. Hello, sir.
Hey, everybody. How's it going?
I should have introduced you as Zombie Lupus Convoy.
Pretty much.
So, how have you been?
I'm a college student, and it's exam periods. That should say enough right there.
I'm too old to go back to school.
I'm thinking I am too, because this. If you are taking a long period away from school, just be prepared for anything like anatomy, physio, biology, microchemistry, things like that. Just expect that it's going to be insanely difficult.
Yeah, it's been a while. Did you do your homework? I gave you homework last time we recorded. Did you do your homework and listen to the first two episodes of the show?
It was on my to-do list, and I left my iPod at home when I went to the hospital.
Oh, crap.
But I can listen to it on the way to work.
Yeah, you say that now, you'll leave your iPod at home again.
Oh, probably.
Oh, crap. All right, so...
The beatings will commence until I start listening.
Well, you know, the whole point of listening back to your own stuff is, you know, hearing the final product with all the audio and all the other stuff into it, because which one was it? It was, in episode 1 when we did In Blackest Night, I put that whole end scene in where he does the oath.
Oh, okay.
for that episode intro. Like, okay, we would end Secret Origins, and then right before we started doing the Blackest Night record, I put a clip from the show to bumper it between talks. So I put the whole end scene where he's facing the Manhunters and he pledges the Green Lantern oath. So... Yeah, get listening, you.
I'm one of those people that really hate hearing my own voice in a recording.
Well, I am too, but, I mean, still, at least listen to it once. It's not like it's going to kill you. I mean, you know, hell, look at me. I have to listen to it at least 4, 5, 6 different times, so you can imagine how much I hate hearing my own voice.
True.
Because I have to edit it and all the other stuff. So, you have anything else you'd like to bring up?
Not really. Yay comics. Woo. Going with that. But,
what do you think of the big DC shakeup?
I'm not really sure what to take of it. I'm very excited that we're going to have a shakeup with Green Lantern and my buddy Guy is getting his own comic. Again, I'm very excited about that. But, other than that, I'm really not sure what to make of all the change-ups and switchovers.
Well, you know... First of all, did Paul Levitz resign? What happened?
I'm not sure. All I saw was there was a big shakeup with DC, and
yeah,
people were being moved around, and I'm just like, okay.
Yeah.
It's still going to be a hell of a lot better than Marvel, so...
Hey, watch it.
I've gone a long ways. I used to be a very hardcore Marvel fan, especially during the 90s. During the whole X-Men, like, that's what I grew up on for a while, and I've just gotten so phased out after Civil War and House of M, things like that. I could deal with the death and rebirth of Aunt May. I could deal with the the Clone Saga, but Quesadilla over there, it just...
Quesadilla?
Quesadilla. I'm sure anybody that listens to Slice of Sci-Fi will get that joke, but Joe Quesadilla. Yeah, he's rubbing me the wrong way.
Oh, jeez. But you gotta admit, outside of The Dark Knight, their films are a hell of a lot better than what DC puts out.
I will give you that. Mostly because there isn't too many DC films that are out.
Well,
I mean, instead we get Smallville 90210 and...
Have you been watching Smallville at all?
I stopped watching it after seeing the second episode of the first season.
Are you serious?
I'm serious. My significant other, though, all the seasons. Hardcore.
Well,
but I.
You need to get caught up with. You need to have him give you year by year synopsis. Because I liked it up until the seventh season. Last year, I completely got lost. They completely screwed the whole Doomsday storyline. This year, I haven't really been paying attention. Of course, for a better part of the season, I haven't had cable TV. I just got it back, and I watched The Absolute Justice, the whole big movie deal thing. Meh. It was...
I heard it was something that you could definitely just plop down and watch. It wasn't something that was...
It depends. It
required a lot of
pre-. I liked the... No, it. I mean, it didn't really tie into any of... I mean, it did tie, you know, each episode together, like, as far as what's already happened this year in Smallville, and then, of course, at the end, what's coming up. But it's like... I like the effects and everything else, and I like the costumes, but the storyline... Ugh, it sucked.
I'm sorry.
It just sucked.
Heard that they had done a pilot for the Aquaman spinoff, and I was really excited about that for some reason. Go figure. But I really just can't get into Smallville. I'm probably a horrible person for saying that. But.
No, you're not, because a lot of people don't like the show. You know, and granted, there are a lot of super fans like your significant other, and I used to be one of those super fans, because it had been, if you look at Superman in TV. It had been 3, 4, maybe 5 years since Lois and Clark, The New Adventures of Superman, ended. Yep. So we didn't have a Superman TV series since from 97 to 2001. And then Smallville comes along, turns everybody on their ass, and says, hey, this is going to be the young Clark Kent, it's no longer Clark Kent as a teen. They're bringing him into, I think what they're going for, because I'm under the impression that there is going to be a 10th season, they're eventually going to end the show with him in the costume, but I think they could have done that a couple of seasons ago and ended it there, because it's like, holy crap. But anyway.
Is he flying yet?
I haven't really been watching it that much. I know, now see, within Smallville mythology, when he was exposed to red kryptonite, or, I don't know, one of the color kryptonites, where it gave him his Kal-El personality, Kal-El can fly, Clark cannot. That's now, funny. I'm not sure if Clark has, like I said, I haven't been, like, totally up on it, so, I don't know. Yeah. All right, well, we are going to get into some episodes today.
Okay.
Your instincts were right about this one, sir. My tests say he's a Kryptonian.
A Kryptonian? I thought they were extinct.
Apparently not.
A rare specimen. And quite strong, too. He should do well on Warworld.
Save your cheers. That's not what Draeger fights for. Draeger fights for honor. And for our leader, the great Mongol.
Well said, Draga. But I wonder what your opponent thinks. Don't you? He hails from parts unknown at a weight of 720 mass units. Meet Krodar the Terrible. He prefers to let his weapons do the talking. And that's exactly what they'll do on War World.
Oh boy. First up today is War World. Oh god, kill me now. I'm actually glad that I started this show and that we started it after Michael David Sims and James Doe over at World's Finest Podcast started their Justice League coverage on their show, because they're already ahead of us. They're already into season two, and I've already listened to their episode with War World in it, and Mike used this very cliche stoner voice for his synopsis. I'm not even going to try to emulate it, but it is just so funny. I think it's episode 70 or 71 that War World's in. I forget which one it's in, but yeah. I guess I will take the synopsis on War World. Oh god, this, oh.
Part take it one for the team. Take it for the team.
Yeah, right. Part one begins. Superman and John Jones are planting explosives on a large asteroid in danger of hitting Earth, while Hot Girl is monitors from the watchtower. Too late! The scanners detect a pocket of hydrogen gas inside the asteroid, and when the charges are set off, the explosion is so massive that it knocks Superman and John unconscious, and severely damages their javelin. Their unconscious bodies are picked up by an alien ship on a scouting expedition for Mongol, the ruler of War World. On the planet, Mongol entices the latest gladiatorial fight between reigning champion Draga and the latest contender. The fight is over within minutes, and the crowd boos. Mongol calls the ship's captain, who assures him that the latest prize, a Kryptonian, will give the people a good show. In the watchtower, Green Lantern joins Hot Girl, and they fly off together to investigate. Examining the wreckage of the javelin, Lantern picks up the slave ship's ion trail, which he follows to an outlying world. Interrogating the locals, they find one who overheard the ship's crew mention their destination, War World. Superman awakens in the cell beneath the arena. He breaks free of his chains and finds Jean, whose powers have been weakened by the planet's atmosphere. They try to escape, but only Jean can pass through the energy shield surrounding the prison. As the guards come for Superman, he tells Jean to leave. In his throne room, Mongol is hearing discounting the reports from his minister of the worsening conditions in the city, insisting that as long as he can give the people good spectacles, they'll forget their squalor in their lives. Hearing news of Superman's attempted escape, he decides to make an example of him by immediately matching him against Draga. With his powers weakened, Jean can do little to more than act as a spectator in the next fight, where Superman is matched against Draga. Though Draga's strength and endurance are nearly the Kryptonian's equal, Superman still beats him. The people are thrilled with the show, and Mongol gives thumbs down, ordering Superman to finish off Draga. Superman refuses. Angered, Mongol orders the robotic guards to kill Superman, ending this first part. God, can you say horrible?
So I take it the cough is how you really feel about this episode.
Well, no, I'm actually joking over here. I may have to edit part of that out. I was going to hit the mute, but my Skype window isn't maximized. But this has
it really
to be,
is that bad.
Yeah, it really is that bad. This has to be the worst of the episodes of the entire Justice League show. It has to be.
Extremely painful. I couldn't make it through in one sitting.
I made it through it because I figured, okay, well, you know, I'm going to have to make it through it, you know, to be a good reviewer to do it. I mean, I only have 4 notes the entire thing. I didn't even want to finish watching. I didn't even want to watch part 2, but I did anyway. But the plot is subpar. There is no character development at all. Mongol is by far the stupidest villain ever. The only good side to this is GL and Hot Girl are probably the only two characters where there is development. Granted, it's petty back and forth bickering, as they are the old married couple already.
Yep.
It's just abysmal, needless, senseless violence. Ugh.
Wow, I've got a lot more notes than you.
Well, good, because I was hoping you would be able to carry it.
Okay. So, again, we see Supes in a Superman in a space suit. John sounds so excited. No! Oh! And you definitely get the feeling that he's not human, but wow, way to really pull that, like, lack of emotion into the character. So where exactly are they supposed to be? Because they've got these communicators going on that have no relay weight in space at all. They're like, oh yeah, I can hear you just fine. Oh, it's like you're right next door with a walkie-talkie. Oh, this is great. How?
They could be cell phones.
Maybe.
They could be Bluetooths.
We see more Hot Girl and Green Lantern, like you said. Seriously, they're going to start just randomly blowing up the asteroid without actually waiting for a full spectrum analysis of, oh, hey, there's gas pockets in there? How come you didn't catch that the first time? Way to go, Hot Girl. Yeah, try to off your teammates a little bit early. All right.
Yeah, no, you're right. It's like, wait, why are they even
blowing it up in the first place?
No. All right, well, it said that why they're blowing up in the first place because it could potentially hit Earth, which is, you know, that's all well and good. But didn't they have, like, sensory equipment sending feedback back to Hot Girl? If so, why didn't they wait till that was done and then set the charges? No, we're going to blow it up now!
She followed protocol, though. She followed protocol, as she plainly pointed out to GL.
Yes.
So obviously their protocols need to get a little kick in the booty, but it really just threw me, like, why are they trying to blow it up? Seriously, like, they couldn't just launch it somewhere? It's Superman.
Yeah,
how
sure.
How many asteroids does he push away or throw away or something like that? I mean, as much as we've seen in the movies and in the prior show.
Very true.
Okay, so the first guy that we see fighting Draga, I thought it was a cross between Cthulhu and the little aliens from Mars that we saw in the first episode. And later on they're like, oh, well, at least he didn't beg for his life. We never see the guy talk. We don't see a mouth. How can he talk in the first place and beg for his life?
Yeah, it's just a couple of giant eyes. Or one giant eye.
And, like, the entire time he's got, like, these laser guns and things that he does this shooting spectacle for the audience. But,
yeah,
like, really? You're going to try to strangle him with your tentacles? Wow. And apparently every alien out there knows about Krypton. Because everyone's like, oh, it's a Kryptonian. Ooh, really?
Aren't they extinct?
Yeah, one little planet blows up and everybody seems to know about it. Did I miss something?
It's probably a convenient for the plot device type of deal.
Yeah. So,
well, no, wait, didn't they... Wait a minute, I'm trying to think. Didn't the guy scan him or do some sort of test? Yeah, he did some sort of test on him. He did some sort of DNA sequencing or something to that effect. So that's how he knew he was a Kryptonian.
Okay.
Because it said, he goes, you know, you won't believe this. You know, he's a Kryptonian. Oh, I thought they were all but extinct. So they did some, yeah, that's what it was. They did some sort of test on him before they threw him in the cell or whatever it was.
Okay. Must have missed that.
Still sucks.
Yeah. The entire episode, I was like, man, I hate Mongol. I hate him so much.
He comes back, unfortunately.
Well, I mean, his son's in the comics, and it was a big thing in Green Lantern, but still, I was like, I hate this guy. I hate his entire family. Really, just why is he around?
I don't like him here. I actually hate him in these two episodes, but I did like him when he did come back in... For the Man Who Has Everything, which is a JLU episode.
Which we'll see later on.
Yes, yes. But Yeah, Mongol is not a good character whatsoever.
No, he's just kind of there. He doesn't really do much. He's just a really bad dictator.
Yes.
So the entire time when Superman is fighting a alligator to save Jean in the penitentiary or holding cells or whatever you wish to call it, the entire time he's fighting this alligator, I keep going, "Crikey! Isn't he a beauty?" the crocodile hunter.
For a second there, I thought we were going to make throw another shrimp on the Bobby reference.
No.
Crocodile Dundee.
And watching this episode, I'm like, it's Running Man. Where's Arnold? Where's the Governor? We see Bad Cop and Better Cop with the old married couple.
And
her mace, where is it coming from? It just keeps popping in and out of existence as it keeps doing, because it's magic.
Yeah, but this will come up way later down the lifespan of the show. But once she, I'm sorry, I'm not saying spoilers for anybody who hasn't already seen it or anybody who doesn't already know. At the end of season two, she chooses to leave the league, but they were going to kick her out anyway. When she comes back in JLU in the return, a couple episodes after that, when she's in her white pants and her white and black halter top there, the mace is like right on her leg. Like right on her, like her upper thigh, right before you get to your waist there.
Yeah.
And it's like, is it magnetized to her pants?
It's made of plutonium.
Well, it's nth metal, but... But yeah.
So it's like unobtainium. Okay. Oh, what is it? So we got to see that they used the comic title The Man from Krypton during his big introduction with Mongol.
Oh, yeah.
What else? Where exactly are they? Like, are they around a yellow sun? Because he still has all of his powers.
Yeah, that's what I'm wondering, too. Where the hell is War World?
Because they go from what I am assuming is the War World that they're in, and then the war that they go to.
The thing about where they are is, it's funny, regardless of the, like, War World, the city, compared to the thing that they're... He has his powers when they're actually not when they're in the arena.
Right.
So, I don't know if there is a yellow sun around War World. I don't know what kind of dimension they get transported to. I'm not sure.
I'm not sure exactly where they are, because, I mean, we see one world where it's all red, one that's normal colored, that apparently affects Jean, because... Can't have everyone being uber strong in an arena episode, I suppose.
Yeah.
And then the thing that really throws me is during one of the fights with Draga, he gets an axe to the chest, and it cuts him. And I'm kind of like, well, what the hell did that come from? And you know, what's it made out of? Is it made out of the same material as Hawkgirl's axe?
Mace, you mean? I don't think it.
Sorry.
I don't think it cut it. Well, yeah, but I don't think it cut him. I think it just cut the shirt. I think it just cut his uniform, didn't it?
In the other episode, we see a red line through there to indicate the blood. So.
Oh.
So I'm like, wow. Okay, so does he have no invulnerability now? What's going on? And of course, at the end, we have Jean going, "No, don't kill him." And it's maybe it's because he's Martian. Okay, I'll take that as a valid excuse, but it's not very convincing emotionally. Like, no, don't kill my friend.
No, he gets more emotional once you get to Hereafter.
Okay,
he has to give the eulogy. But there is absolutely no emotion for him in that ending part of the scene.
It was one of those, okay, if we axe him off, I could get his quarters.
Oh, that's funny. Alright, do we have anything else we want to say about part one?
Do God make it stop?
I think we'll be saying that throughout the rest of part two as well. So going into part two, Superman withstands the first blast from the guards, but is severely weakened. As Superman falls, Jean extorts the crowd, or exhorts, or extort, whatever, I don't know, I'll say the damn word, encouraging them to root for their new champion. Before Mongol gives the last order, Jean starts cheering, "Superman! Superman!" Yeah, that wasn't too convincing either. The crowd takes up the cheer with enthusiasm, and Mongol realizes that executing Superman will alienate his subjects. He reluctantly sends Superman back to the cells. Back in the cells, Superman is likewise cheered by the other prisoners, who tell him they've arranged an escape route for him. Superman says he can't leave without his friend, and instead asks them to smuggle away the unconscious Draga, who has been dragged away to be discarded. Hot Girl and Lantern cram themselves into the spacer's ship as he promises to take them to War World. However, when they are distracted, he gasses them unconscious and dumps their bodies on a garbage dump world. With no idea of where they are, they can't risk leaving the planet to search for another inhabited world, as Lantern's ring may run out of power before then. Wait. Isn't he supposed to charge that damn battery every day? What the hell?
Just about.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Can last for, I think it lasts for 3 days without being actively used. But.
However, they have... Yeah.
Seriously?
I don't know. That's another stupid plot device. However, they happen to have landed on the same world where Draga has been dumped by the escape ship. Obsessed with avenging his defeat by Superman, Draga offers to show them the way back to War World. In his throne room, Mongol offers Superman a choice: throw his next fight with Mongol himself, or watch as a death ray under his control destroys Draga's home world. Superman has no choice but to agree. The entire population watches avidly as the next fight begins, with Superman deliberately losing in the middle of the fight. Lantern and Hawkgirl arrive on War World with Draga, who detaches himself and rushes to the arena, determined to finish Superman off himself. Superman tells him that he has to let Mongol beat him or his world will be doomed. Draga is taken aback that his opponent would sacrifice his life for Draga's people. As the fight goes on, Jean meets up with Lantern and Hot Girl. Together they manage to destroy the death ray before it can fire on Draga's world. They rush the arena and inform Superman, who stops taking Mongol's punches and counterattacks, but it is Draga who administers the final beating that knocks Mongol unconscious and takes his crown. He offers it to Superman, who refuses and advises Draga to take it and rule the people well. Oh, God. My head hurts.
Oh, God.
Ow!
My notes for part two are a lot shorter than part one.
I have three, that's it. And two of them aren't even really notes about the episode, they're just comments.
Go ahead. Go for it.
I asked this on the Earth2.net forums for the World's Finest Podcast fans as well, and I got a response that but anyway, here's my question. Could Draga be a smaller version of Doomsday? The reason I ask this is they both have vengeance for Superman. They both kind of look alike, even though Doomsday is slightly larger in the cartoon. But I got a response that no, Draga just Draga wants revenge from being dishonored, and Doomsday was just a weapon, used by the government.
Right.
And then my last two notes is ... Thank God I'll never have to watch these two episodes ever again. Damn, these episodes sucked.
They did. were very, very painful.
Yes.
I think I only watched one of the two when they originally came out. But, so we got lame comments from Jean going, "No, he's a Superman." No.
But you also got to realize that's, I don't know if, I can't decide. I don't know if Carl Lumbly's voice was vocoded for this show or had some sort of synthesizer behind it, because I watched like a couple episodes of Justice League and I would watch a couple episodes of Alias because he is in that, and the voices, even though they're the same person, don't sound the same at all. So I'm wondering if there was some sort of, not a vocoder, but some sort of something behind his voice when he did the cartoon. I don't know.
Not sure.
Yeah, I'm not sure either.
I'm surprised that the alien didn't try to loot them after he dropped them off. Knocked out. Like, they're obviously, like, physically moved in different areas. So
yes.
I'm like, how come they didn't try to steal the mace? Oh, wait, it's magic. I forgot. Didn't try to steal the Green Lantern ring. Oh, forgot. That's huge plot device. The thing that threw me is there's a scene where Jean tries to become Mongol by transforming himself, and he gets a headache or too weak, and suddenly he reverts back to his human form, but not his Earth, his Martian form.
Right.
And that threw me. I'm like, why? Why is he able to hold that shape but not Mongol? Is it that he doesn't know Mongol well enough and hasn't retained that shape long enough?
No, it's the fact that he said that there was something wrong. There's something in the atmosphere that was zapping his power.
But I understand that. But why wouldn't he revert to his normal actual
Martian form? It was probably a design choice on the animators or the creators because, I mean, honestly, Jean's Martian form... He's a little hard to swallow.
True.
That Martian form is kind of a little fugly.
I agree. It's not cute and cuddly. So the next one I've got is that the mace is obviously just one hell of a mace because it can stop effectively a Starkiller with just a swat.
Yeah, that makes no sense whatsoever. She just... got in front of the cannon, you know,
and swing.
Put that big honking mace down, and sent it back to back into the cannon. It kind of reminds me of, I don't know if you ever played this, but Legend of Zelda: A Link to the Past on Super Nintendo.
Yep,
there is the Angham boss level where you have to use the bug catching net to fire his shots back at him.
Yep.
That's the first thing I thought of when I saw her do that.
Well, another thing is, like, okay, so you've got all this firepower. It's getting bounced back by a mace. But then it's hitting the cannon on the planet they're on, and the planet's not being destroyed. How? The physics is...
Yeah, that is true. That whole planet should have been destroyed, not just the place of where the cannon existed. Because that whole building, that whole structure gets destroyed.
Should have gone boom.
Yeah, shit don't make no sense.
So, the last thing that we see is like, oh, here, take the crown of Mongol. You deserve it. Rah, rah, rah. And Superman gets into this whole, like, no, honor is not how you die, it's how you live. I'm like, I want to get into this huge ethical debate about the concept of honor, but this episode is not worth it.
No, it's not.
And there was that whole scene where Draga basically, like, sears this Superman S onto his chest by himself using some rebar, and I'm like, they're trying to make him seem really badass and on this huge crusade, but it's not working.
No, it's not.
So that being said, can we put this episode behind us and never speak of it again?
Oh, yes, we will never. This episode of the cartoon will hereforth be known on the Secret Origins podcast as that episode that shall not be named.
Not be named.
Because holy fucking crap, worst episode ever.
Ever.
There he goes!
Watch him now. Fire!
Hey! Ah! My insurance doesn't cover a second driver.
Now there's something you don't see every day. Oof. Having fun, Mojo? Easy, boy. We'll have you back behind monkey bars before you know it.
Get your stinking paws off me, you filthy human.
Say what?
And next we have The Brave and the Bold, Part 1. And in Part 1, it starts off in Africa with a British archaeologist couple that are examining the remains of prehistoric men. Behind them, unnoticed by either of them, a mountain disappears, replaced by an enormous futuristic city. A dark-haired gorilla on a hoverbike speeds out of the city, pursued by a team of other gorillas, who turn back when they see the humans. They return, and the city disappears, replaced by the mountain once again.
What was that? Oh. Yeah. I like that line from the woman. What was that?
And never mind the male paleontologist is going, gah, 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 gah. Anyway, in Central City, Flash is wolfing down burgers in a diner and regaling two nearby ladies with tales of his heroism. Or trying to. They look rather bored to tears. However, trouble starts when a large van comes speeding down the street, shoving aside cars heedlessly. One car comes flying through the window of the diner, nearly crushing the two ladies before Flash saves them. He excuses himself and takes after the van.
Okay, before you continue, I do have to interrupt you here because after he saves them, right before we see the scene where he's chasing down the van, they say at the end, we should have given him our phone number. And I don't know what it was about those two chicks, but it made me think that they were either bi or they were lesbians.
Wow, okay.
No, I'm not, there's nothing wrong with that, but it's like, you know, okay, yes, there can be male and female roommates that, you know, male and male roommates and female roommates, but it's like, holy crap, they just came off as lesbian to me. I don't know.
See, I would have picked that up later in the next episode, next story that we touch on,
mm-hmm.
But I didn't pick that up on this one.
You mean the next set of episodes, Fury?
Yep.
Yeah, we'll get into that later.
Okay.
Continue.
Okay, so he's taken after the van, and the driver refuses to slow down while the passenger aims a futuristic-looking pistol at Flash and fires, missing, obviously, several times. Finally, the chase leads to a bridge over the ocean where the van skids off the side and teeters on the edge. The van and its occupants are narrowly saved from falling by John Stewart, arriving to give Flash a hand. In the back of the van, they find containers of radioactive isotopes. They check the driver's IDs and find that both are research scientists at the institute from which the isotopes were stolen. Dun dun dun! Both men appear to wake up as if from a trance and both claim to not remember what they were doing. At the institute, Flash and Lantern question the scientist's colleague, Dr. Sarah Corwin. Corwin asks that she... Corwin says that she has no explanation for their behavior, except possibly stress from overwork. While she speaks to Lantern, Flash notices an adult gorilla among the lab's test monkeys. While Flash is grabbing a snack, he and Lantern intercepts a truly bizarre report. A gorilla has been sighted downtown, terrorizing citizens, and is now driving away a getaway car to escape the police.
Oh, wow.
Flash chases down the car and is surprised when the gorilla tells him to get away. Then Corwin, hiding on a rooftop, blasts him with some kind of energy ray. The Flash then has a series of bizarre hallucinations.
And those were funny. Those were very funny. The hallucinations.
They were creepy.
Yeah.
But also to note, we did get basically a run through of his origin in the beginning of the hallucinations, in a, kind of a flashback way.
Yeah.
He wakes up inside of a jail cell. The police show him a surveillance tape of him stealing the isotopes from the police impound. His interrogation is cut short by the arrival of Lantern, who takes him away, then angrily subjects Flash to another interrogation, with smacks upside the head, which was great. Flash insists that he's innocent and can't explain why he's stealing the isotopes. The last thing he can remember is stopping the talking gorilla. I'm sure you all can imagine how that went over with the Green Lantern.
Yeah. But that doesn't... Okay, but... Why does GL, or John, or whatever you want to call him, why does John not believe him when John is a fucking Green Lantern? He's been all over the fucking galaxy, and he can't believe in a talking gorilla?
Oh, best part. One of the Green Lanterns from his original comic era,
mm-hmm.
I think it's Gnort, is a talking dog. Bust is a talking fly. I don't understand why he has a problem with a talking gorilla. But hey. So, back to the run-through. Lantern is skeptical, but they manage to track the gorilla down. The gorilla introduces himself as Solivar, chief of security for Gorilla City, a civilization of hyper-intelligent gorillas hidden from mankind. Their city has been peaceful until recently when Grodd, a genius scientist, developed a mind-control helmet that he tried to use to take over the other gorillas. The authorities developed a resistance to the helmet and chased Grodd out, but now he's sworn revenge on the city. Solivar also says that his investigation has found an email correspondence between Grodd and Corwin. Needing no further information, Flash streaks back to the Institute before Solivar can explain that he has a small supply of electronic headbands that will shield a person from Grodd's mind control. What, that didn't sound right at all. Flash streaks. By the time he and Lantern get to the Institute, Grodd has already subdued Flash and uses him to attack Lantern. Lantern knocks him out with difficulty, but Grodd and Corwin have escaped. Grodd has used the isotopes to power the machine in the heart of the central city, which he activates before he and Corwin speed away on his hoverbike. Lantern and Solivar run to the machine, but then it gives off a colossal energy surge, like an explosion, that covers the whole city and leaves nothing behind.
Yes. I'm actually going to go with my first, my last note first. Central City go poof!
I was thinking like City in a Bottle or something like that.
Yeah.
But just, I was expecting to be either blown up or displaced into another dimension or shrunk really, really itty-bitty.
Yeah. That that reminds me of the G1 episode where Megatron started shrinking cities. Oh,
yep.
Geez. As I said before, I like how in the beginning the people, the archaeologists, are like shocked to see the hidden gorilla city. That was so funny.
It was awesome, and I didn't even catch what, like, species they had dug up. I'm like, what? That doesn't, huh? Is that a monkey skull?
Yeah, I didn't catch it either.
And normally I'm very good about that.
Yeah, boy, that power ring ain't so powerful, you know.
Oh, God, it's...
What's the deal, man? I thought the Green Lantern power ring was like this, you know.
It's this uber plutonium device. It really is. They've toned it down like Superman.
Yeah, wow. He couldn't even stop that blast. Holy crap.
Yeah, well, I mean, we've seen him fight yellow energy before, so that shouldn't be an issue. So I don't know what's up with that. And in the episode that shall not be named, you know, oh, I don't know how to get to this war world.
Yeah,
it's a giant. It's essentially a supercomputer on his finger with the world's knowledge. I figure it can. It's got a GPS built in. Come on, it can tell you where you are, where you need to go. It's God. One thing I did love about this episode, though, it's Flash centric. We haven't seen that much of the Flash lately.
Yeah, no, we haven't since the beginning of the series.
Right, and we get to see the one thing that I've always loved about the Flash is the extremely high metabolic rate and how he constantly needs to eat.
Yeah.
He's eating burgers left and right. We see him, like, trying to hit on the girls, but it's the Flash, and we now have effectively learned that he talks too much. It's all braggart with him until he actually does something, and then people take him serious.
Well, you know, in later seasons and later episodes, once we go unlimited, once they introduce Fire, he has the hots for her, quite yep. literally.
Oh, it's just, I, and I didn't quite understand why the Flash was going so slow.
Yeah.
Like, there's a point where there's this couple that's getting rubble dropped on them from a building when it starts to collapse, and okay, he's got enough speed to run around them, create a vortex to knock all the rocks into the trash bin, but he's not fast enough to catch up to a speeding car. I'm not seeing the corollary there. I did notice that there was an animation error when they're facing down Solimar and they're trying to subdue him. The cops start off in SWAT outfits, but then when he jumps over them through his superior monkey powers, suddenly their SWAT equipment disappears and they're in standard blue uniform.
Yeah.
And then it comes back. I'm like, wait, what?
Yeah, that was an animation glitch right there. I like in that scene how he got the little kid on the monkey bars.
The kid's
bar.
Like, whoa.
Whoa, and of course he just lets go of the bar. He drops right on his ass.
Kid's like, okay, I can't compete with that. And, yeah, so we got the hyper-metabolic rate. I thought that was great. We had two different, like, pop culture references. We get the Flash calling him Solimar Mojo.
Yep, Powerpuff Girls.
And then right after that, we have Solimar going, "Get your hands off me, you damn dirty human."
Yeah.
It's like Planet of the Apes. Right.
Yeah. Actually, it's funny. I had a Planet of the Apes note about Gorilla City.
Right.
It says, can you say City of Apes or Planet of the Apes?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And interesting to note, I think that's the same line that Charlton Heston used in the remake of Planet of the Apes, if I'm correct.
Hmm, cool.
So, someone explained to me that there's this huge city, right?
Uh-huh.
It's got a force field around it, yeah, yeah, yeah. It's made to look like a mountain. You mean to tell me that nobody in Africa has ever tried to climb that mountain? Lots.
Oh, and they take it one step further in part two when Wonder Woman and Hot Girl show up with, and then Batman shows up with them, but Wonder Woman, they fly right into the force field.
Yep.
What the hell?
You mean the one's going to be like looking at this wonderful panoramic view, and all of a sudden this bird flies into the force field and bounces off?
Yeah.
No one's going to notice things like this? Oh, God.
Yeah, it's one of those things where it's a plot device, but these two episodes aren't nearly as bad as that episode.
That shall not be named.
Yeah, that episode that shall not be named.
What else do I have? Okay, so you've got this huge technological monkey city, right?
Yeah.
Am I correct in thinking that gorillas don't have opposable thumbs?
I have no idea.
I'm pretty sure they don't. I could be wrong. I'm not ideal paleontology, not vertebrate anthropology. So I could be insanely wrong on that, but I'm wondering how exactly they can create such fine, minute technology without opposable thumbs. I could be way off base in there. My apologies, but... what else do we have? The gorilla talks. That line made me think of Into the Woods, which is a dramatic play that they have of various nursery rhymes all mashed together.
Oh, wow.
And there's a scene where Snow White and Little Red Riding Hood are talking to one another, and they're in this jam, and they need to get some help. And Snow White says, "I'll talk to my little bird friends." And Red Riding Hood, without missing a beat, just goes all dour and goes, "You can talk to birds." Right. You're a little crazy there, lady.
Yeah,
it gave me that vibe, like.
Yeah, well, not to get off topic, but this is kind of off topic. Back in episode 29 of Tooncast, we reviewed Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs for the Disney Animation Spotlight, and that movie on Tooncast is the movie that shall not be named because holy crap. But anyway, yeah, you should go back and find that episode. I'll send you the link or something. But yeah.
We see Dr. Corwin, which I thought was a very interesting last name, considering, you know, Jeff Corwin, the zoologist. But
right.
She goes to shoot the Flash. And I'm like, way to go, lady. You're going to shoot him with a flare gun. A flare gun. Because that's what it looked like.
On a slightly larger scale.
Yeah, but it was still like, wow, shoot him with a flare gun. Way to go, lady. And then there was a point where Green Lantern was like, oh, I hate to do this. I'm like, no, I think you're venting some frustrations. You really do just want to smack Wally for all those times that he's hitting on your girl. Yeah. And
well, now, wait a minute here. We can't really say that GL and Hot Girl are together because they're really not yet. That doesn't actually happen. That won't actually happen. The two of them getting together and realizing they're in love won't happen until Wild Cards.
True, but...
I know. It's all set up. I know.
Yeah, so we see that the Flash works at a lab, apparently, before his big electrical accident. So, obviously, he's got to have some brains there.
Right.
So he's not just some big goofball, which was kind of nice to see.
Well, that'll come into play in the next episode once we start talking about part two.
Yep. So, shall we go on to part two?
Yes, we will be on part two in 1 minute.
Okay, so in part two we have them starting off in the Watchtower, and Jean notices the apparent absence of Central City and flies down to the Javelin, accompanied by Wonder Woman and Hawkgirl, because he's, you know, pimping them out. Though there's nothing visible but a crater in the ground, the ship's sensors detect something there, and the ship glances off something solid but invisible around the city. Landing, they realize that there's a force field enclosing the city, which is impenetrable to any of them. Inside, Central City is intact, but only hidden from the outside world as Gorilla City is. Lantern and Solovar awake and meet with Flash. Grodd is now holding court in the city square with a crowd of people under his mind control. Lantern, Flash, and Solovar confront him, but Grodd sicks his puppets on them before flying off again. Lantern takes off in pursuit, while Flash and Solovar try to hold the mob at bay without injuring them. Mind you, the gorilla's also got a gun, so I'm not sure how that's going over well. When they draw too close, Flash, with an effort, picks up Solovar and runs through the crowd at super speed with him.
Stop!
Until he reaches safety.
Stop!
Stopping!
He says, Flash asks him, how much do you weigh? About 400 of your Earth pounds. So you're telling me that these are outer space international gorillas.
Oh, crap. Never mind the hidden context in what he says. Everyone ignores the 400-pound gorilla in the room.
True.
About 400 pounds. I'm like, he did not just say that. No.
Okay, continue.
Okay. Wait. How exactly did the Flash pick up a 400-pound gorilla?
Yeah, he doesn't have super strength. What the hell? That makes no sense.
That threw me. I'm like, wait, how did he pick up a 400-pound gorilla?
Well, it does say, and he does say in the episode that it took him some effort to do so.
Yeah, still.
But you would think that, you know, even if he did pick him up, which he did, and then he started running at super speed, you know.
He might have shuffled at super speed.
But it makes no sense how he stopped, because if you think about it, you know, mass times velocity, whatever the, you know, math is on it, you know, mass time or speed times force, that's what it is. If you stop right on a dime like he did, he wouldn't be able to set Solovar down. Solovar's fat girl ass would have sat on his head.
I'm pretty sure Solovar would have kept going. Nothing but inertia moving that guy.
Oh, good lord. Yeah.
Okay.
We left off with Batman.
Yes, Batman communicates with the Leaguers outside of the city and says that he has found identified similar energy readings from a location in Africa. They agree to rendezvous there as soon as they arrive. However, they are captured by the city's security forces, who believe they are spies from the outside.
Okay, stop one more time.
I'm stopping like the Flash.
It shows specifically, well, not really specifically, but we see in the when Batman's in the Batcave, we see the Bat computer screen with a map of the U.S. or not the U.S. a map Africa? Of the world. Well, it's a world map, and you see Africa over here, and you see the U.S. over here, and on the U.S. where it shows where Central City is. Now this yep. is you know, it's been said it's in Ohio, and it shows that it's in that area. But you know, again, it's one of those things. Just like I almost said Smallville. Just like Metropolis and Gotham, we don't actually know where they are, but you know, I would say that Central City is around Ohio, somewhere in Ohio.
That would work for me.
Yeah. Okay. Oh.
Where was I?
Back to Grodd.
Grodd. Grodd and Corwin drive to a nearby military base where Grodd overcomes the soldiers with his helmet that arms 4 nuclear missiles. Lantern, Flash, and Solovar arrive outside the base just as the missiles take off. Solovar realizes that they're heading for Gorilla City, and Lantern flies after them, while Flash and Solovar run into the base to stop Grodd. In Gorilla City, the other Leaguers manage to escape their prison, but find themselves trapped by the shield. As they are cornered by the Gorillas, the shield malfunctions and shut down. Grodd left the sabotage device behind. At the same time, the Gorillas detect an incoming missiles. To their surprise, the League offers to help them, because, you know, they're the Justice League. They do that sort of thing. Flying over the Atlantic Ocean, Lantern manages to catch up with and disable 2 of the missiles, but as the second breaks up, a flying piece of debris hits him in the head, temporarily knocking him out cold. At the base, Grodd sees the 2 missiles go down and attacks Solovar and Fury. Flash distracts him by patting his helmet down over his eyes. Grodd rounds on Flash, who dodges his punches with ease, because it's not the same as chasing after a car. Lantern awakes and catches up with the missiles only in time to see them heading for the city, but the other Leaguers are waiting. Jean faces right through one, extracting its guidance system and causing it to crash harmlessly. Hawkgirl smashes the last missile with her mace, breaking it into pieces, but the warhead stage is still heading for the city. As the Gorillas scream in panic, Diana flies into the missile's path and tries to push it off course. She stops it from exploding, but it drags along the ground, finally crushing her underneath it before it grinds to a stop. At that, Batman's stoicism cracks, and he digs furiously at the rubble under the missile, shouting Diana's name. When there's no response, he gives up, but then the missile body lifts, and Diana emerges, holding the guidance system. The city is safe and the Gorillas cheer. Batman tries to hide his dirt-covered gloves from Diana, but she notices him and kisses Batman on the cheek. Aww.
Yeah, that whole continuity there, that will be... Bruce Timm and them had never actually said that they were eventually later in the cartoon were going to be together, but they were going to toy around with it because, you know, you would think that the two most powerful... or two of the most powerful of the Leaguers would get together, being Superman and Wonder Woman. They wanted to play around with people's minds a little bit and have it be Batman and Wonder Woman.
The whole Trinity.
Yep.
So, seeing the last missile deactivated, Grodd goes berserk and attacks Flash. Still evading, Flash proposes a fair fight and takes off his headband, inviting Grodd to take off his helmet. Grodd, of course, does no such thing. Smiling, he activates his helmet and then screams as it feeds back on himself. Flash explains that it was easy, that he crossed some of the helmet's wires when he patted it down.
And that goes to show you that even though this is the Wally West Flash, he does have
a brain,
yeah.
To his surprise, Corwin turns out not to have been under Grodd's mind control, but instead she had genuinely fallen in love with him. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, we have the bestiality factor of this series.
Yeah. This is actually where it starts, you know.
But we did have the whole, like, Cheetah Batman thing going on.
Well, but there's a big difference between the Cheetah Batman thing because he was just using her to distract her. You know, I mean, it's the goddamn Batman. He can do whatever the hell he wants. But when... Oh, God. Just continue.
The League meets up in Gorilla City, where the leaders thank them for their help. Solovar shows them Grodd, a brain-dead vegetable, bearing an almost comic resemblance to a zoo ape. However, as the League and Solovar walks away, the vacant look in Grodd's eye disappears, and then they narrow with hatred.
Yes. Also, this is where Grodd got his mental powers.
Ah.
That's why later on he has those mental powers, is from this episode, I believe.
He doesn't need the helmet anymore. He just has it naturally.
Yep. I like the visual of GL spinning out of control after getting hit by a chunk of the missile. I mean, it was just an awesome free-fall look. And for a minute there, you thought that, holy crap, he's going to crash right into the ground without even using his ring to bounce him back up.
Make a trampoline, make a trampoline.
That's not till later.
The first thing that struck me about the episode is we see Diana trying to, like, talk to a Green Lantern in the Flash.
Mm-hmm.
And she puts her hand up to her earring. And I'm like, wait, her earring is a communication device now? Is it synergy from Gem? What's going on here?
Hey. No, but the earpieces are in their ears, though.
Are they?
Yeah.
Okay. I haven't seen anything really, like, with earpieces
so far. Right, but I mean, every time that I see them trying to communicate with each other or whatever,
they're doing the whole hand to the ear?
Well, they're doing the finger to the ear, or something. One finger, two finger, something. But yeah. I don't know.
What have you got for the episode?
Well, the GL thing, and then you already stole my other note. Okay, can you say bestiality? Yuck.
Yeah.
Because, like I said, you know, this actually starts Grodd's bestiality in the cartoon. Well, females going after Grodd as far as... I don't think you can really count Giganta's bestiality, because the simple fact that she was originally a gorilla.
Oh. Okay.
That shows up, we will see that later in Secret Society, I believe. She was originally a gorilla, and Grodd turned her into a human because, much like human females have a crush on him, he has, you know, feelings for human females, which...
Which is weird, considering he wants to enslave them all.
Well, that, and he wants to, later on in JLU, he wants to turn everybody into an ape. De-evolutionize everybody. I think it was in the,
What would that do to, like, Superman and...
Yeah.
Hawkgirl and...
Yeah. Well, it was Superman, Batman, and Wonder Woman that got turned into apes.
But why Superman? He's not human.
I know, but we'll get to it once we get to it. We'll get to that episode once we get to it. So, yeah, that's pretty much all I have for this. I don't know what it was about a lot of these episodes today. I really
didn't have much for the
not for this two-parter. I didn't know, because I kind of like it. Like you said before, it is a Flash-centric episode, and we haven't seen a lot of those yet. And I just found myself watching it. Is it something that I can put in to watch? No. You know, just like for enjoyment? No, this isn't one of my top picks from Justice League, but it's not the worst episode either.
Right.
All right, so...
What else? I think I still have some...
Go ahead.
Yeah, actually I do.
Go ahead.
Who would have thought that? Let's see, we hear Solovar saying Gorilla Tech is highly advanced. I'm like, that's funny in itself, really. Diana's like, oh, the javelins were built by Batman, so I know that these instruments are right. I'm like, that's right. You know who's in charge. You know who the goddamn Batman is.
Yeah.
Yeah. So apparently monkeys can defeat the magic mace we saw in this episode.
Yep.
I think the best line was we see Grodd standing there preaching and monologuing to his mental slaves. The humans are slow, ugly, immoral, and have unpleasant body odor. Okay, why does he like women? But then the Flash just kind of goes, "Who are you calling slow?" And then out of nowhere, Green Lantern says, "Flash, Stop heckling the supervillain.
Yeah, I know. That was... You just found the quote of the episode, sir.
Woohoo!
I forgot about that. I'll have to go back and grab that.
Oh, what else do we got? The thing that threw me is Diana says, what madness is this when she breaks out of... They all break out of their holding cells, and she sees a city of gorillas. Now, she's on the island of Themyscira, Greek-style culture. Then she moves to the U.S. And, you know, the Justice League Watchtower. Has she ever seen a gorilla before in her life?
I doubt it.
Yeah, neither... I'm not thinking that she has before either, so I'm kind of like, what's going on? And the gorillas at one point said, stop those humans or something like that, or catch the humans.
Yeah.
I'm thinking, poor Hawkgirl and Jean. Like, Jean is a Martian. Shahira is a Thanagarian. They're not human.
Yeah, but they look human. Well, Jean doesn't... Okay, Jean doesn't look human. A hot girl... if you took the wings off, she would look human.
And the helmet.
Yeah. And that's another thing that I'm going to be bringing up a lot, especially once we get into the whole DL hot girl relationship thing, is how the hell can you sleep with someone who has two large fucking wings in their back?
They magically shrink?
Yeah, right. Oh, wow. What did you say?
We know who's on top.
Oh, for a second there, I thought you said they pop off.
That's possible.
Wow, that would hurt like hell.
Well, we've seen in comics, Thanagarians don't necessarily have wings.
Well, right, but I think that they were going for the whole realism thing here.
Right.
So, yeah.
Let's see what else. So we see, at one point, the Flash says about Green Lantern's ring, I've got to get me one of these. Which is insanely funny, because in the comics, now there is a Blue Lantern Flash.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like the original Flash has a Blue Lantern ring.
Oh, that's
so
cool.
It was kind of like, oh, interesting. What else? So I'm thinking Grodd and the Ultra Humanite should like hang out for a while. And after Grodd gets arrested, I'm kind of thinking like Corwin's going to get put into the human penitentiary, obviously, and maybe she'll be hitting on Ultra Humanite.
You know,
she's got a thing for
that. Again, that's
big brains.
I brought it up in the last episode, of course, if you had re-listened to the last episode. You know, is Ultra Humanite from Gorilla City, because he is a gorilla, and he is highly intelligent.
I don't know. I don't think that was his origin, but I don't really remember.
Yes, so if you are listening to this episode like some co-host should be eventually, please call in 502-526-5821. Let us know if the Ultra Humanite is from Gorilla City. You got anything else?
The little quips that the Flash has, like, well, you're naked, so yeah. And by the end of the episode, I was like, no more monkey puns. Please. So that's all I've got for this episode.
Alrighty then.
Emergency situation. Repeat, this is air traffic control. All runways are full and we've got 30 planes stacked up in the air.
What's the nearest secondary airstrip?
I'm low on fuel.
I've got sick people on board.
Please clear this channel unless absolutely necessary.
Unit 32, requesting backup.
Pulse is erratic. He's going into shock.
Knock down those flames before they hit the main line!
It's like some kind of plague, and half the city's got it.
Yes. The male half.
Finally up today, we have Fury, and in part one, at Gotham Biotech, a series of super criminals, Copperhead, Shade, Solomon Grundy, Star Sapphire, and the ninja, Sakuri, break in, led by an imposing blonde woman. The woman removes a small plant culture from a secure vault, but on their way out, they are confronted by Batman. Again, what the hell? Because we see him in the ductwork or in something. Is he just hanging out here all the time?
He does the rounds.
I know, I know.
It's a very popular place to, you know, break in and steal stuff.
I know. I get that he is the goddamn Batman. Don't get me wrong. He is. But, I mean, it's just... It's surprised me every time he shows up so far from us watching these cartoons. It's like, holy crap. Is he... I don't know. He manages to subdue most of the gang, although Sakuri is a handful. But when he reaches the woman, she defeats him easily and knocks him unconscious. After the woman defeats Batman, she walks away. In a department store, Diana is wondering, frankly, baffled by the fashions in vogue in modern women and seeing instances of men's rude behavior. Batman finds her and tells her about the break-in, insisting that the woman's strength and piece of jewelry he grabbed off her marks her as an Amazon. Diana says that's impossible. She's the only Amazon who's left the mascara. Okay, the department store scene. I know, I don't think...
That was awesome.
I don't think I made a note of this. I don't know. No, I didn't. But, yeah, we gotta talk about the department store scene. You know, she says in the beginning of the show in Secret Origins that she might, you know, stay a while, and Flash tells her, stick with me, I'll teach you the ropes or whatever. Well, isn't he supposed to be doing that? Because she's... By the time this episode, let's say... say it's been 2.5 years or whatever in their timeline. So she's been there a while, and she still doesn't know about department stores and perfume and everything else. She was going to rip that lady's arm off.
No, there was that, you know, going into the mall, totally terrorizing it, ripping it apart, looking for that one little artifact.
Well, true. They didn't actually...
It's like, oh, this is what it looks like when I'm not tearing it apart. Okay.
Okay. Diana, being banished, Batman dispatches Hot Girl to the island to investigate. She is taken to Queen Hippolyta, who recognizes the jewelry as belonging to an Amazon named Arisia. Unlike the other Amazons, Arisia was born a mortal in the outside world. As a child, she escaped her country when it was devastated by war, losing her family in the process. She... fled in a refugee ship, but it was attacked by pirates at sea and then sunk. Arisia was the sole survivor and drifted to Themyscira on a floating piece of wreckage. The Amazons adopted her, trained her in the arts, and magically gave her super strength. That was a big fucking mistake. During the gang's next robbery, the Gem Vault, Arisia purposely taunts the Justice League on the surveillance camera. She removes a large ruby from the vault and is confronted by Superman. After defeating Superman in combat, she throws a gas grenade that infects him with some kind of virus and then escapes. Diana, arriving late, recognizes Arisia and flies Superman to the Watchtower while Green Lantern and Flash pursue Arisia. On Themyscira, Hippolyta and Hot Girl find Arisia's room empty, with a hidden chest containing maps of the outside world and books on germ warfare. Dun dun dun!
Hello.
A short time later, Lantern and Flash return to the Watchtower, affected by the same illness, while Batman is ferrying back Hot Girl from the island. They hear radio reports of disaster striking in the city. Men everywhere are being struck down by the virus, while female emergency workers scramble. Thoughts?
Oh boy, what? I've got a lot. Do you?
I've got a few for this one. I noticed a. Normally, it's you that notices the animation stuff, but I noticed one. Is Sakuri supposed to be blind?
I don't think so. But
okay, because I noticed that there are eye markings drawn around her head, her eye band or headband or whatever it is, because that bandana is it's over her where her eyes should be.
I thought it was supposed to be a really like quasi-opaque visor, so you couldn't really see her eyes.
She was blind. I don't know.
That would be very difficult if she's flying a plane.
True. And of course, like I mentioned earlier, when Batman arrives, hey kids, it's Batman. I loved the double kick he does when arriving on the scene. That was awesome. That was just so, so awesome. When we first see the Gem Depository logo,
yeah,
it looks like a Superman S to me.
I didn't even notice that.
If you go back and you watch, like, right before the gem scene, like, right when it starts, when we first see the logo, it kind of reminds me of the Superman S logo. When GL falls over, he falls right on Wonder Woman's tit.
He was faking it.
No, he wasn't faking it.
He was faking it. He was like, I'm just going to land here. I'm going to die. I'm going to at least die doing something good.
There are a lot of things. Well, there's one thing later on in JLU that's going to come up with Wonder Woman's tits as well, because I'm probably going to use that for a screen, probably for an art image for the episode. Grundy is a zombie. How, he's an undead thing. How can the virus affect him?
I don't know. That there's all sorts of things that didn't make sense to that to me about that.
A plague that only infects men. I've never seen that plot device before. Never. I mean, I know, and it is said in part two, and I know we're not there yet, but it's said in part two that Aresia is pretty much taking the Amazons' hatred, not really, well, hatred of
philosophy.
Men. Yeah, she's taking that philosophy to a world scale. But, yeah, Grundy's a fucking zombie. How the hell does he... Yes, he is male, don't get me wrong. He could be transgendered, I don't know. But,
he could be asexual, too.
That's true. But, yeah, but he's supposedly an undead thing. So, how is a male infecting... I don't... What do you have? I don't know. I just don't know.
Okay, so starting off the episode, we see the Injustice crew, or the crew from the Injustice for All episode.
Yep.
Back together. I'm like, yes! Alright! I love these guys. And I was really excited to see Solomon Grundy and then the Shade. I'm like, oh, come on. What's some witty repartee from the Shade? After that whole, like, oh, the plot thins,
I want
some more snark from him. How exactly does electrocution work on a zombie?
I don't know. That's the other thing. I have no idea.
I don't get it. And there's Diana versus her ultimate foe, the hypersexualization of women. She goes in there. She's like, why would you want to change your natural beauty? I'm like, how exactly do you have lips that red, lady? You are not Snow White. I don't understand where that came from, but...
Yeah. That was.
I thought honestly that it was like the Amazonian time of the month. She's so pissed off at like
hot girl
every guy. She doesn't like hot girl. She doesn't like people spraying her with funky smell and stuff. Of course, nobody really does. But I'm really surprised when hot girl goes to Themyscira, and she's like, "Oh, I guess diplomacy's not going to work." I'm like, "You're hot girl. Diplomacy and talking is not your forte. You smash things."
Right, but you gotta understand, though.
I'm surprised she's not, like, getting out the mace, beating everybody, going, "Rah! You will listen now! Rah!"
But I did like how Hot Girl did go there using her head and not her big honking mace.
True.
You know, because she was, you know, trying to, you know, help out, you know, and help out without smashing stuff up.
Which is different for her.
Which is what?
Which is really different for her. They made a nice comment about Luthor and how they were getting paid better and more often with her, with Aresia.
Well, the difference between Luthor and Aresia is that
Aresia's not threatening them.
Well, Aresia's not deathly ill from kryptonite poisoning, and they're actually stealing gems.
True. What else we got? Star Sapphire and the gem. She's like, ooh, you got my attention. I'm like, yep. That's Star Sapphire, seeing that link with the whole gem thing. Yeah, Supes is a wimpy little bitch.
Mm-hmm.
Like, seriously, like, he's so... sad, actually.
Yes, he is, actually.
What else? I didn't quite understand why the security camera. Aresia's like talking to it to try to get a message to the Justice League saying, oh, we challenge you, we dare you to come down and stop us. It's like, it's a security bank or a gem depository recording. It's going on tape. How are they going to get instantaneous, like, download of that? Especially during the time period that it was created in.
I don't know. Maybe the Justice, you know, like Batman said in Secret Origins, a hidden line item within the Space Arrow the aerospace, you know, budget or whatever.
Yeah.
You know.
And how did... Okay, so on the same vein that the toxin worked on Grundy, how did it work on Clark or Kal-El when he's Kryptonian? He's not human?
That's interesting.
And, you know, the Flash is...
Flash is human.
The Flash is human, but there's a scene where they're like, oh, we're gonna find a clue and go through all these trails. It was him and Green Lantern, maybe. But the entire time I'm thinking, wait, isn't the Flash, like, wasn't he originally a forensic specialist for the police department?
Mm-hmm.
Why does he need help, like, figuring this stuff out? He should be smart enough to do it.
Well, you gotta realize, too, that they combined for the Flash in this cartoon.
Yeah.
They mixed and matched the Wally West biography.
And Barry. Okay.
So it's a combination of the two, so the brains aren't always going to be there.
What else? There was a scene that I just watched, and I believe it was Green Lantern, and it might have been Diana, mm-hmm. or Hawkgirl, and the look when the female touched Jean, it was like Jean was going to say, bitch, get your hands off me.
If I ever get a chance to interview Carl Lumbly, oh god.
No, it was just like, wow, that's not a very happy face there. And I think the last one I've got is there's a scene where they're going to Themyscira and it's Batman and Hawkgirl, and Hawkgirl's just saying like, oh, I can't imagine what it'd be like to lose your parents and the trauma it must do to a child to be an orphan. And the look on Batman's face, it's like, you really have no idea who you're dealing with.
Well, exactly. And he had picked her up from Themyscira. They were on their way back. That was okay, at the end of the episode. Right. It's the end of the episode. And you don't even get a real look on his face. You see her, and then it frames out to show him, it shows the two of them in the cockpit. And you just kind of see him turn his head slightly to the right and kind of like looking out of the corner of his eye. And then, of course, the thing over the loudspeaker starts coming up. But yeah, that was just like an awesome, awesome scene.
And it's like, open mouth, insert wing. Way to go.
Open mouth, insert wing. I don't think she can... I don't know
if they pop off.
Yeah. Well, if they pop off, yeah. If they pop off, yeah. Overall, I like the first part. I like how they leave it on that cliffhanger. You know, and again, it just goes to show you how well the cliffhangers are done. Yeah. Well, in some cases.
In other cases, not so much.
No, in other cases, not so much. So, yeah, I don't know. So I guess we will move on. So, in part two, we have, among the Injustice Gang, Grundy, Shade, and Copperhead have likewise been struck down. Aresia reveals to Sapphire and Sakuri that her plan is nothing less than to kill off the entire male population of the world, which she sees as the source of all its suffering. While Batman, Hawkgirl, and Diana are doing their best to aid the emergency workers, Batman is likewise struck down. With him back at the Watchtower and Jean administering to the male members of the team, only Diana and Hawkgirl are left. I like how, and this is just a little going off of that scene, they don't, even though Superman slash Clark knows who he is, they don't take his mask off. Because at first I thought they were going to leave. I didn't realize that. I forgot that they had taken him back to the watchtower so Jean could tend to him. I thought they were going to put him on another stretcher. Like they did in Secret Origins.
Wait.
Huh?
Huh?
What do you mean, huh? Batman.
Right.
Oh, okay. You said right. I didn't hear that. Speak up. Okay. So, well, let's see. Arisha and her accomplices steal into a military base to appropriate a stealth bomber. Before the takeoff, they are confronted by Hippolyta, who has left the island, to try and convince Arisha to stop. Arisha refuses and subdues Hippolyta and takes her prisoner. Diana and Hawkgirl are lured to the base by Sapphire and are likewise unable to stop the gang from taking off, with Hippolyta on board. Hawkgirl finds a sample of the virus among the dropped things, but when she calls the watchtower to alert Jean, he has also been infected. Oh boy. Diana takes off after Arisha, who is planning to launch a set of cruise missiles into the atmosphere that will spread the virus all over the world. Hawkgirl joins Diana and they board the plane. She makes one last effort to try and convince Arisha, who rages at her that men are worthless and the world will be better off without them. Hippolyta reveals that Arisha did not survive on her own. The captain of her refugee ship found her floating and held on to her while they both drifted across the sea. He died of exhaustion just as they reached the island and was buried on Themyscira, the only man who lies there. Arisha is shocked, but it is too late to reverse her hatred of men, and initiates the launch sequence as she fights with Diana. Hawkgirl rescues Hippolyta and then smashes the bay doors with her mace, jamming them shut and leaving the missiles to fire inside the plane. Sakuri and Sapphire bail while Arisha hits Diana hard enough to knock her out of the plane. As Arisha, huh?
That's got to be a really powerful punch to push.
Bitch slap
through the window.
Bitch punch. As Arisha tries to regain control, the bomber explodes with her inside. Aboard the watchtower, the male members of the League have recovered thanks to Hawkgirl finding Arisha's notes, allowing her to synthesize an antidote. Superman and Lantern are distributing the antidote to the city. Diana laments that Arisha was never exposed to men's world, or she might have seen that some of them have noble qualities, then reconsiders when she gets a sight of Flash's table manners. Oh, boy. thoughts?
Oh, I didn't have too much for this one.
I have four notes. Again, these are... These two episodes were just enjoyable to watch.
It was.
Yeah. One of my notes, Batman, a member of the public transportation crowd. Because he's driving the bus. What the hell? Arisha tries punching in the code key. Like, when they're at the military base, she tries punching in the code key, and then she just punches the console to gain entrance. It was just dumb.
That's how it always goes.
I know. Wonder Woman threw the gun at Star Sapphire. The gun from the plane.
Right.
So funny. Chick fist fight. Not sexy.
what do you got? I got the queen is apparently, even though she's the queen of the Amazons, a horrible fighter.
A horrible what?
Fighter.
Yeah.
Like, the ninja chick just sneaks up on her. I'm like, really? She doesn't try to throw her or anything? Just, oh,
Yeah.
I get knocked out. Ugh. There was an animation error where they're trying to lift something up. Diana's flying, lifting it up. I think it was a helicopter that was falling. You could see the background was incomplete, and the clouds were quite literally cut in half.
Oh, yeah.
The mother half's going, what's up with those clouds? I'm like, oh my god, you're right. what else? The best line is when they're talking about why would you want to get rid of all men. And Hawkgirl's like, hey, don't knock until you try it, princess.
Yeah, and that'll come up in a couple of episodes, actually.
We see the queen shackled, which I thought was really apropos considering the Amazonian origin.
Yep.
Star Sapphire's motivations seem a little bit wonky considering their element is love and it's very emotional based. So to get rid of all men on the face of the earth seemed really bizarre to me for her for motivation.
Right, exactly.
And then how exactly do they plan on keeping a one gender society going? I don't think she thought about that far enough. Like Reese is like, oh, I'm going to kill all the men. Great. So how do you get more women for the next generation?
I could make a really, really horrible triple X rated joke, but it won't work.
God, I loved it when, but I really had a feeling of Ariza and the ninja chick. What's her name? Scooty. I had a feeling of, like, there was something going on between the two of them. Like, I really had that feeling, like, for some reason. And then at the end, when Sakuri jumps out with the jetpack and says, thanks, I like you, but not that much. I was like, oh, okay.
Burn!
And then just the classiness of the Flash at the end.
Yeah.
Yeah, Amazons are sexist bastards.
Yes, yeah. Wonder Woman's virginity will be questioned in a couple of episodes. Not the next episode of the show, but in the fifth episode of Secret Origins. So we'll discuss that once we get to the Savage time.
And the thing that... Okay, she's flying around. I understand that Wonder Woman can fly, but I was really hoping that she'd get in some invisible jet and fly off.
That comes later. The invisible jet does show up, but it shows up way later in the series.
Oh, it was a very cool looking bomber. I'm like, oh, I hope she gets her invisible jet. I'm like, no. Oh, that sucks. Sorry, Risa, you're not good enough for the invisible jet.
Well, not yet. Like I said, it does come in later in the series, so. You got any other notes?
And that's all I got for this one.
All right, we'll be back with the outro.
You're wrong, Arisha. Without men, you wouldn't still be here. After your ship sank, you must have lost consciousness as you drifted on your makeshift raft. You would surely have drowned had the ship's captain not found you and pulled you to safety. Valiantly, he struggled to keep you alive. Until he brought you to the shores of Themyscira. The effort was too much for his heart. His final resting place is a simple, unmarked grave. He's the only man ever buried on Themyscira. So you see, for all your hatred of men, it turns out you owe your life to one.
Thank you for joining us here on the Secret Origins podcast. There are several ways to get in contact with us or leave feedback for the show. First, you can visit www.geekcastradio.com and find all the other GCRN podcasts there. Second is you can stop by at protoconempire.com/nexus. Those are our forums. And the third is you can leave the show feedback in iTunes. Please do this. We now have a voicemail line. Call us and leave us your thoughts on each episode. Be sure to say what show you leaving the message for and your name. The number is 502-526-5821. For those of you who are going to be listening to this episode, call in and let us know if the Ultra Humanite is from Gorilla City or not. You can follow us on Twitter. The show name there is Secret Origins. Mine is TFG1 Mike, and what is your Twitter?
CAMINITISTYLE.
We hope you
need something better.
Huh?
I need something better than that.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Secret Origins podcast, which you'll join us next time when we'll be reviewing three more stories from Justice League Season 1, those being Legends, A Night of Shadows, and Metamorphosis. For now, I am TFG1 Mike with
Lupus Convoy,
and we thank you for listening. Until next time.